Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, but not really for this week, Jimmy Traina. Give you a little quick preview of what's to come. I'm actually off on vacation enjoying the end of the summer before football starts. My media colleague at SI.com, Jacob Feldman, is filling in for me this week. He has a roundtable interview with Peter King, Bob Lee, Ann Killian, and Dave Sims. So we got some of the titans here in sports media with Peter King and Bob Lee. On this episode, it was a roundtable discussion that took place at the National Sports Media Hall of Fame induction in late June. Jacob is here with me now. Jacob, you want to give us just like a quick preview of what's to come here on the SI Media Podcast?
Sure. First off, hope you're enjoying the vacation that you're midway through and when yes. People are listening to this. Yeah, it was a lot of fun getting them. I'll tell you, I have a lot more respect for bookers now after trying to get four people in one room at one time for an hour. But they were gracious enough to do it on a Monday afternoon, I think it was. So it was a lot of fun. It was funny. I went in with two dozen questions. I think I maybe asked five. Just because of how good a conversation was. I mean, these are four, like you said, titans of sports journalism who probably have over 100 years easily of experience.
So you just covered the state of sports media and
we talked about some misconceptions. It's interesting. They have four very different jobs. Some, you know, Dave Sims works for the Mariners in a lot of ways, and so the different ways and maybe the things people don't understand about media. We talked about their abilities to stay fans, and then we talked about politics, debate shows. LeVar Ball was mentioned. Had a great conversation about this owner versus governor debate and kind of the words we use. So yeah, we covered the whole field.
That's pretty much the only way he'll ever get mentioned on this podcast because I won't ever do
exactly.
It. But all right, so if you're listening here, just a quick notes. Make sure you subscribe. And if you didn't check it out last week, we had Jim Miller on who talked about Ed Werder going back to ESPN and the fallout from the Dan Le Batard controversy. We got into ESPN and politics a little bit, talked some pop culture stuff, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Eddie Murphy. So if you haven't listened to Jim Miller last week, check that out. 2 weeks ago, Stone Cold was on the podcast. I will be back with you next week. We get ready for football, so hopefully we'll have some good guests lined up as college and NFL quickly approach. And on this episode, like I said, my SI.com media colleague, Jacob Feldman, who you can find on Twitter, JacobFeldman4, has a roundtable interview with Peter King, Dave Sims, Ann Killian, and Bob Lee.
Nailed
that's
it.
Right now on the SI Media Podcast.
Hello from historic Winston-Salem, North Carolina. My name is Jacob Feldman. I'm a media reporter at Sports Illustrated. I'm thrilled today to be joined by four sports media titans, each of whom will be receiving an award from the National Sports Media Association in a matter of hours, but they're willing to stop by for a little chat first. So we're going to go around here. I guess I'll start with Ann. Ann Killian is receiving California's Best Sports Writer Award for the third time in 5 years, is that right?
Yeah.
And has been called America's Best Columnist. A Bay Area native, she joined the San Francisco Chronicle as a columnist in 2012, but has spent decades covering area teams, reporting on, by my count, 10 Olympic Games, 6 World Cup. She's actually taking time away from covering the U.S. women as we speak, probably.
At least from watching.
At least from watching. And has written about athletes from Barry Bonds to Colin Kaepernick to Kevin Durant. So it's amazing how many stories seem to revolve around San Francisco these days.
Yeah.
Next up here, we have Bob Lee, who needs hardly an introduction. Bob Lee is entering the Hall of Fame this year. Congratulations,
Thank
Bob.
Thank you very much.
He's ESPN's longest-serving commentator, joining the network on its third day of operation in 1979. He's become the go-to voice in breaking news situations from Magic Johnson's AIDS announcement to the aftermath of 9/11. He's been described as a dream father-in-law by Brian Curtis of The Ringer and ESPN's Voice of Record.
Did he talk to Matt? God bless him.
And he's interviewed four sitting presidents?
Yeah, that's correct. But some of them were standing at the time.
And he's currently on sabbatical from the network. Next up, we have Dave Sims all the way from Seattle. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to be here.
Thank you for coming. Dave Sims is this year's Washington Sportscaster of the Year. He's handled play-by-play duties for the Seattle Mariners for over a decade, but has also called games for ESPN and Fox Sports, as well as doing NFL work for Westwood One and CBS Radio Sports. A two-time Emmy winner, Davis appears on MLB Network and co-hosts Basketball and Beyond with Coach K for SiriusXM Satellite Radio. Initially a writer for the New York Daily News, Dave has pretty much done it all. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Last but not least here to my right, Peter King. He's entering the Hall of Fame with Bob after nearly 40 years of unmatched NFL coverage. He wrote for Sports Illustrated from 1989 till 2018, including by way of disclosure, 18 months as my boss at the MMQB, and before joining NBC Sports, where he appears on Football Night in America, before putting together his weekly must-read column, Football Morning in America. He's been named National Sports Writer of the Year 3 times, and he has been a Pro Football Hall of Fame selector since 1992. Good to see you again, Peter.
Jacob, thanks for asking.
Thank you all. So I'm going to start off broad. I'm not going to direct these questions to anyone in particular, but we'll do it second grade style. If you don't speak up, I'll pick somebody.
Well done.
So what do people understand least about your work, about this job, about sports media?
Well, you're looking at me, so I'll answer. I think they don't understand that we aren't fans. I think people often will say, you know, your team, about someone I cover, or you guys. Most of us got into this world and this business because we were sports fans. We love sports. We love the way it can bring people together. We love the stories there are to tell. But you get the fandom washed out of you pretty quickly. And if you don't, you really shouldn't stay in the business. But having said that, of course, we get attached to humans. And so if a player, for example, Alex Smith, a guy I covered who was treated not very well in San Francisco, goes off to make his way with another team, I find myself actually having a strong rooting interest in, you know, seeing someone like that succeed. But I think that's one of the major misconceptions about our jobs.
And I subscribe to that for all the years I was a newspaper guy and for most of my broadcast career. But since I've been with one team and getting paid by that team, I'm a fan of the Seattle
well,
Mariners.
Those of us who aren't paid by a team.
But I mean, I totally understand where you're coming from. But I remember Gary Cohn, who does the Mets on TV, and when I got this job, he says, you no longer are parachuting in. You have a team. You have your guys. And I always think back to when Phil Rizzuto sometimes would get a lot of grief for being, you know, being a homer. I get it, because you're with these guys all the time. When the Mariners do something, especially if it's good stuff and we're in contention, man, you can just hear it in my voice.
But I'm a Mets guy. And I watch Gary and listen to him all the time. And being down here in North Carolina for the weekend, I want to be able to listen to how he and Keith and Ronnie on SNY are dealing with this meltdown. And he's a perfect example of a guy who's able to walk that line. We know where the paycheck's coming from. And they don't have to get into every single nook and cranny in detail, but they will have an informed opinion, and they will – you'll know where they stand, and just by the tone of voice. And they walk that, and it's a delicate line at that point.
Oh, you have no idea.
Extremely delicate.
Oh, my God, it's so delicate. I mean, it's sometimes a couple of word choices years ago, I said something, and it wasn't anything inflammatory. I didn't think, and some executive was listening. You know, tell Dave Sims to stop saying the word knock. I said, knock? I said, you know, we need about 3 base knocks right here. I said, I wish I'd said something a little bit more controversial, but people are listening in that regard. So when you talk about walking that, you know, it's a very delicate line when bad stuff does happen, man, you really have to watch what you're doing.
I think the most interesting thing about this job over the years that I've learned, Jacob, is that it's just like what guys like Chris Collinsworth and Joe Buck talk about all the time, that it wouldn't matter if you had 1 million people listening to what you say and you just said that the Green Bay Packers are the greatest franchise with the greatest players with this, you would have 3% of the fans to say, oh, this guy is anti-Packer. And so what I have found over the years, especially with the advent of Twitter in 2000, when I got into it in 2009, you know, the first year or so, I really engaged with the turd balls on Twitter.
Roger
and
that.
I would throw it right back at him. And finally, my wife once said, she said, don't you understand that you're never going to win? You will never win. But the bottom line in our business is that I don't root for a team. I've never rooted for a team. I root for my story.
Yeah.
That's what I root for.
Which is one reason that a lot of print reporters root for blowouts. People go, wasn't that a great game? I'm like, oh, it really wasn't.
But the other part of it, and I would just say this, is that I think when you have done it for a long time, I the only thing that I really care about at the end of the day, I mean, probably if you ask, you know, 50, you know, just normal, significant readers of my column over the years, they'll say, you're in the bag for the Patriots. I mean, there's 5 significant people on the New England Patriots who won't talk to me, including Bill Belichick. And I mean, so I have done some things over the years, obviously, that some people in that organization don't like. And the bottom line is, you're never going to make everybody happy.
All you can do is your job. Right. You know, whether you're working for a team, whether you're working for a network that has all those business relationships.
Right.
And, you know, at, with us, you know, the phone's never rung, the arm's never been twisted. We do what we do. And you talk about having the fan washed out of you a long time ago. Yeah, and I miss that. I do miss that sometimes. Yeah, because you're focusing, well, what does that mean in a business sense? You know, NFL story that Peter's breaking or whatnot. And can't I just sit back and hope for, you know, a touchdown? Because I'm a Giants fan, and the best part of, you know, living in New England is knowing that, you know, my club took two rings right out of the grasp of the Patriots. But you're not going to get into that on OTL. It's nice to carry it around in your soul. You're not going to parade that back.
Do you find little, you know, areas of sports that you can kind of keep away from the journalistic element? You know, that's the sport you're not doing play-by-play on, or the sport you're not covering?
I'm a Red Sox fan, period. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not saying that isn't why I've never covered baseball. I covered baseball early in my career, covering the Big Red Machine in Cincinnati.
Nice.
I loved it. It's so much fun. But I do find this, that I've been offered twice the ability to go cover baseball, once to write the baseball column at Sports Illustrated. And I just thought, you know what? I love, on a warm July afternoon, going to the ballpark, having four beers, and keeping score and watching a game. I kind of don't want to do it as a job.
My fandom goes to the Philadelphia Eagles, where I grew up. I can remember first game I went. I think the first game I went to see, the Eagles played. And as I recall the story, it was like Black Jesus coming to town, because Jim Brown and the Browns were coming in. And everybody I knew that was, you know, African-American in Philadelphia wanted to beat her and see that guy against the Eagles. And I've never forgotten that.
I keep mine to like the EPL, to professional soccer leagues, since the U.S. doesn't really have a professional soccer league. No offense, MLS. But no offense to ESPN's coverage.
I'm not disagreeing with your assessment of the level of play.
Wait a second.
It's fabulous to wake up in the morning at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning and turn on a Liverpool game, and that's where my fandom comes out.
Okay, but Ann, what about the teams like in Portland? In Seattle,
that's
huge. Okay. They have huge fan bases.
Okay, your sentence can end right there, though.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's the best thing about the MLS. Those are great little markets. Not little markets. Those are significant teams.
I told Don Garber one time that he should move the league office to either Portland or Seattle or Vancouver, because that is where people are nuts about MLS.
They are nuts. It's just the quality of the league. You know, when you watch leagues around the world, like I do. You get up, and I'm also a Real Madrid fan. It's just not.
You've got to root for someone who hasn't had all the silverware. And Liverpool, Real Madrid. I'm a Spurs guy. I've been through thick and thin, but
only recently.
How do you get to be a fan of Tottenham? I will tell you the story. Tell me.
All right, 1997. We're in Marseille to cover the World Cup draw. And Seamus Mallon, who we were talking about before we rolled tape, my longstanding friend in soccer, and he's been around the world many times. Let's stop in London on the way home. We can catch a match and see the sights. And so we do, and he scores a couple of tickets. It was a Spurs-Chelsea game, 6-1 Chelsea, not a single goal scored by an Englishman. And this is in 97, so you can see where Zola had two goals in that game. But you're there at White Hart Lane. They're my team. Drop a couple hundred bucks in the shop, buy everything I could, and there they are. That's 20-some-odd years later.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how it happens.
Yeah.
You know, you can change your wife, you can change your job, you can change your religion, but you can never change
your
club.
But how did you become a fan of Tottenham after just one day?
Because where else was I going?
It
was
the only club
I was there. I was there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that him criticizing me for liking Jurgen Klopp and liking Mo Salah, this is a realistic reason to become a fan of Liverpool, as it was for you drop all that money on gear.
Right. And what's the MLS is up to, 48 teams now?
I think it's 72.
We'll never have promotion in this world.
Promotion, relegation, the correct timing of your football schedule.
Could you imagine if there was relegation in the NFL?
The 49ers would have been relegated.
If you thought ownership was fun covering in 2017, and your $3 billion investment.
But the question is, what would you be relegated to?
The CFL.
The XFL.
There'd have to be a league.
Yeah.
Same in baseball.
Yeah, there'd have to be a league.
Same in baseball.
Mr. Trump, would you like to start a league?
Yeah. Don't get him started.
As a matter of fact, let's have him start a league. Yeah. Let's have him full-time do that job.
Yeah,
full-time job.
I'm going to cut in there real quick
here. Go off the tracks.
Totally unrelated question, but I want to ask Bob about nuance, which was the topic of his recent commencement speech at Seton Hall. Congratulations on getting that honor. You know, in sports and politics and anything, I think nuance is rarely rewarded in our current media ecosystem. So I'm curious what value you see in nuance and how you try to bring it, and we can open it up.
I think Peter gave a great example of nuance that verges onto stupidity, or lack of nuance verges onto stupidity. When people watch the same program, and we'll do stories, we touch the third rail of American society, race, and I've done a number of programs on that. And, you know, when I used to believe that there was a reason to watch and read Twitter, you'd go and do that. And half of them calling you a racist from this standpoint, the other half, you know, you're wrong on this point. The same show plays down the middle. And with so many communications done, and I don't want to sound like I'm sitting here telling people to get off my digital porch, but whether it's a generational thing, but take your heads out of your phone, look up and think. And we just don't see enough of that.
Right.
And yet our media and each of our mediums, if you will, aren't given to that. We have to be quick, we have to be accurate, we have to be fair, but it's got to fit 140, 280 characters. And that's tough to ask someone to say, well, wait a minute, there might be some. We were talking about the Oberlin College situation before, David and I, before we rolled. And that's full of unanswered questions, I think. And you have to process who's reporting this, where are they coming from? Modern civil discourse isn't given to that. We got to have some of that. And we don't. Did I stun the room?
No, it's good stuff.
I'll give you the one thing about, in my opinion, about civil discourse and what I don't really like about, let's forget the larger media. I'll take our media. Let's take the sports media. And I'll tell you the thing that I don't really, really love. I don't love the fact that you can be on TV on one of the 900 argument shows that exist. Okay? And there will be a statement that you make on that show, or that someone will make on that show, that will become for 3 hours absolute fodder on social media. And look, it's kind of like, I forget who once said this, but a talk show host, it might have been Mike or the Mad Dog, but you know, one of them said, or somebody said, we're on the air for 25 to 30 hours every week. And you pick out two sentences that we said about one thing. And it's crazy that there aren't two sentences every hour that people would get outraged about. And the fact is, you simply can't talk the volume that is talked on television today with everything, you know, about sports, without upsetting the apple cart occasionally, and we take it far, far, far too seriously. The opinions of people who are nothing but, and I don't mean to criticize them, they're nothing but glorified fans. They really aren't in the most cases. I'm nothing but a glorified fan who went to journalism school and worked my ass off to get where I am. And all I'm saying is I might write or say something that's really stupid sometimes. That's the way life goes.
But Peter, to be fair, a lot of those people on the yelling shows, they are trying to say something really stupid. I mean, that's they're
well, they're trying to say something notable.
No,
I would argue
they want to go viral.
They want to go viral, and they're willing to say the 180 degree opposite thing the next day if that they think that'll go viral.
Okay, but Ian, let me ask you this question.
Like, having covered the Warriors and having to chase some of these inane opinions that are, you know, some guy puts it out there and then all of a sudden we're like, is Kevin Durant really doing that? Is that really going to happen?
But
is that really going to happen?
I'll ask you this question. Here's two basketball things that have driven me out of my mind. I don't care that Skip Bayless doesn't like LeBron James. I don't care. Stop hitting me over the head with it 16 times a week, please. The other thing I don't care about is LeVar Ball. He is the Donald Trump of basketball. And for some reason, there are programs out there, some on ESPN, that give LeVar Ball microphone all the time, or whatever happens.
Yeah.
Somebody else will, Bob.
I know.
Someone else will.
And it took that for someone to realize maybe we don't need this guy.
The only thing I'm saying is we, you know, the bosses of these companies who will deign to put these guys on the air. In other words, they don't say, somebody should say to Skip Bayless, please stop talking about LeBron James the way you do. We're simply not going to employ you.
Oh, I stopped
somebody
watching.
Needs to have the stones,
I think his ratings,
to say that.
I think his ratings reflect that. That's being said by the country at large.
Yeah, I don't watch it. And I did talk radio, Peter, as you know, because you were one of the one of the first guests on my show when I was at WNBC, mid-'80s. And I did, what, 86 to 93, WNBC and WFAN. And at that time, it was a time to have conversation, try to learn something and not be incendiary and not to beat a drum like you just talked about. And I would never want a LeVar ball on my show after one or two times I saw him on. Yeah. I wouldn't want to have to deal with
it's
that nonsense.
Really, like,
it's nonsense.
I hate to say it. I hate to say this, but when you bring LeVar Ball on your show, what you're doing is your political show bringing Kellyanne Conway. And you're essentially saying, you have the license to come on my show, and I hope you say something really outlandish, because that will make people pay attention to us.
Hey, what are the metrics we're all judged by, though? Clicks,
yep.
Retweets, likes, and ratings.
Yeah.
And you know, Twitter is, how much validity do we, I've stopped using it, frankly. I mean, it aggregates informed opinion to me, but the rest of it, no, because for all the things that we've just laid out. But, you talk about LeVar Ball, not just having him on. His sons go to Lithuania. We had people in Lithuania for several weeks.
That was unreal.
For several weeks. And finally, you know, we bring everybody back because at a certain point, though, it starts as a story. There is some validity.
And man, I just find LeVar Ball he's embarrassing. God.
His attachment to a story leads you to think, oh, this story is BS.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then, of course,
I saw him on TV a couple of weeks, you know, most recently when he was on, and it's like, get away from me! You're just shouting fire in a movie theater.
If you were a basketball team, I'm going to plead ignorance here, but if you're a basketball team, he has a son now who was supposed to be a freshman in college, right?
Right.
Who's going overseas to play. Going somewhere this year to play
Australia
to get by the NBA rule where you got to go to school for 1 year. So let's say he's a great player in Australia, and next year at this time he is rated the 8th player in the draft, let's just say. Wouldn't you, if you were sitting there at 7, 8, 9, 10, wouldn't you say, I wouldn't touch this guy with a 10-foot pole? Wouldn't you say that?
Don't you think the Lakers knew this to begin with
right.
the eldest
son? Well, why didn't they do it?
Well, this... How functional are the Lakers? That question answers itself.
Not functional at all.
Exactly.
But also, he stayed away from the Lakers because LeBron made it pretty clear that he wasn't invited.
Thank goodness.
In.
Thank goodness. Because I can't tell.
Will he push around the Pelicans? Man. Who knows? He could.
I know. I'll just say this as an African American in Rome. That's an embarrassment to me as a black male to see a guy acting like a fool like he does.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Right. It's unnecessary. And the Muhammad Ali Act has come and gone. Don't try to revive it.
Don't you feel sad for
the other
children?
Thing is, he's, you know what he is? You know what he is? He is a helicopter parent gone way out of control. Because, hey, I coached a girls' softball for 17 years. And I had a bunch of helicopter parents in travel softball, believe me. And there was an easy way to control them. And this is the way I'd control, the ball guy. I would just say, hey, listen, you're not welcome at practice. You can come to the game, say whatever you want, but leave your son alone during the game. And those were our two rules when I coached softball. When your child comes through the fence at Mount Hebron Field in Montclair, New Jersey, your child comes through that fence, you can talk to her after the game. There's no, here, honey, here's your water, here's your snack, here's it. If you have something, give it to one of the coaches. We'll give it to them. No communication with the coach. And I'm not trying to be a dictatorial sort. What I'm trying to say is your daughter she's learning how to exist on her own.
Exactly.
In an organization. You're her mother. You can do whatever you want. But if you want to coach her for the next 2 hours, find another team.
You're talking so much about the way athletes are raised and the professionals, the way they come into it. I'm curious, for each of you, maybe for Anne, how you've seen the athletes you cover change over time, especially, you know, there's this idea maybe that they're more sensitive now. I don't know if you've seen that, but how in general you've seen the athletes, you've because you're working with them really over the course of the season, how you've seen athletes change that you've covered?
Well, I think, you know, what Adam Silver said this year was interesting about that a lot of them are really unhappy. I felt like he was talking directly to Kevin Durant.
he seems like a miserable guy.
And well, Kyrie,
and
right?
So Kevin Durant came to the Warriors, came out of Texas, lovely guy. Super accessible. Young at Oklahoma City, you know, I mean, he had us all in tears with his Wanda, you're the real MVP speech. I got to know him a little bit at the Olympics, but right after he had signed with the Warriors, I always had this fabulous opinion of him. He was accessible. He kind of fit in with the whole culture of the Warriors that first year. And then he got more and more kind of withdrawn and seemed apart. He did seem fairly unhappy for most of this year, which is weird because he's already gone through this free agency thing. If you sign a 1-1, you don't make a long-term commitment. Now you are a two-time league MVP, I mean, finals MVP. Your superstardom has gone to a whole other level. Of course it's going to be this intense scrutiny. Of course it is.
Right?
And so
different.
Don't get mad at Ethan Strauss and yell at him, you know, to grow up. I mean, it's just, it was really weird. It was very different. And so, yeah, I felt like Adam Silver was in some way addressing that. And addressing, I think that we're talking about social media a lot, and these guys are in their on their phones all the time. As soon as a game's over, you go in the locker room, and they are sitting with their feet in ice buckets on their phones. And to have that instantaneous critique or love, you the man, but it's just this constant, getting this constant feedback that I think is difficult. Now, I also cover some guys on that team that are really well-grounded. Steph Curry is about the most grounded athlete I've ever covered. Same age, same circumstances. So it's just the individual, you know. But Steph also has he's married. He has three kids. He's super involved in his community. He's super he's just a different personality. So he processes all that stuff differently. I think the guys who spend so much time in their head and thinking about it. So I think I don't know that it's that different than there's always been different individuals in sports. Some deal with the spotlight better, and whether that spotlight now involves instantaneous feedback where it didn't used to. So it's just different degrees.
Well,
but
it seems like it starts younger and younger too. I mean,
I think it
if
does
you
start
have
in
any sport exceptional skills, you're identified by
back
7,
to the
LeVar 8,
Ball
9.
Thing. You know, you think your kid's a superstar
exactly.
right at 12,
and now you're 9 and 10, and you're throwing shutouts, or you're at the 12 points a game, and maybe you're 13 and you can dunk.
Or you get separated.
And you're not. It's not just Facebook and Twitter. Now Max Preps has got or whatever all the websites.
Sure.
And yeah, that was around before, but now the echo chamber of all of these platforms, and you're growing to maturity as a human being with all of those stimuli. It's a strong person who can like stay. I don't want to say abnormal if you're not, but to remain normally adjusted.
I'll let you know the next time I go in a clubhouse and I don't see
everyone
19 of 25 guys with their face in their phone, and I'm the only guy that registered an objection. We had Cliff Lee for a cup of coffee. And I said, are you doing a lot of texting here? And I said, I'm reading a book on my Kindle. I went, hey, tip of the cap, pal. You're the first one.
You know, when I remember when the Kansas City Chiefs had the linebacker for the Chiefs, Javon Belcher, who murdered his girlfriend and then killed himself in the parking lot there with Scott Pioli, the general manager, approaching him, trying to talk him out of it. And I remember afterwards, Brady Quinn, the quarterback of the team at the time, said, you know, we never really ask our teammates how they're doing. We might say, hey, how you doing? What's up? Hey. But we never really want to know. You know why? We have our heads buried in our phones.
Yep.
I want to turn this slightly like 40 degrees different because, Jacob, I think there might have been a sporting line of demarcation drawn in the season of 2017 with the Philadelphia Eagles. Because in my opinion, for so long, so many fans have said, I don't care what you guys think, just play ball. And it's like when I write about something even slightly political, I'll have an 8,500-word column on a Monday, and there will be 17 words that will have something remotely to do with politics. So everybody calls me a political sports writer. I mean, it's a joke. But anyway.
And what's wrong with that?
What happened that year, I think, with the Philadelphia Eagles winning the Super Bowl, and I will never forget this. They played a Monday night game against Washington. Carson Wentz was in full flower. They killed Washington on that Monday night. And the next day, they had five players, including Chris Long, Malcolm Jenkins, Torrey Smith, get on an Amtrak train at 7:30 in the morning in Philadelphia and take the train to Harrisburg. And starting at 10:45 in the morning, they had meetings with state representatives at the State House in Harrisburg to talk about mandatory sentencing guidelines and to talk about four or five real-world issues. There are too many blacks incarcerated and all. And so, and they got praised in some quarters and denigrated in other quarters. And I remember just recently, I talked to Malcolm Jenkins about it. And he basically said that, you know, one of the great things that happened in 2017 is we proved you don't just have to stick to sports. You can be great at the hardest sport in the world. You know, and anybody, whatever sport anybody plays yeah. is the hardest sport right. in the world. But you can be great at the hardest sport in the world. And you know what? We have time off. Yeah. We have a day off. We can go to Harrisburg and we can lobby politicians.
You're allowed to think for crying out loud.
But Peter, you really think that was a line of demarcation?
Because I just
ran,
so. I think
I just ran into Colin Kaepernick sitting inside, you know.
That's a different story. Colin Kaepernick, in my opinion, is an outlying type of story that is once a generation in sports. And I think the Philadelphia Eagles showed that, first of all, the Philadelphia Eagles, there's not a single one of them that were, that I would say were, you know, doing some of the incendiary things that Colin Kaepernick did. And now, before you say anything, I am absolutely, to this day, still, I wouldn't call it outrage, but I still think it is ridiculously unjust that he did not get another chance to play football.
Right.
However, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles, basically, when they were at their facility, it's all football. Now, they may have done a few interviews there about, hey, we need to do this, we need to do that. But they didn't go demonstrating during games nearly as much as what Kaepernick did. And I'm not criticizing Kaepernick. I am fine with Kaepernick doing that. But I think the Eagles were a different story.
What an impressive guy Jenkins is.
Really?
We had him on at the Super Bowl in Houston the year before when he was not a household name
yep.
out there. And he was doing ride-alongs with the Philadelphia Police Department. We had him on our show several times during the 17th season. And in addition to pursuing what you were talking about, Peter, and going for down to Harrisburg, and they also spent time on Capitol Hill and talked to him down there, managing the schism between the Colin Kaepernick wing, if you will, and the other side of the Players Coalition –
He refused to get blown up by that.
Exactly.
He refused to criticize Colin Kaepernick.
Behind the scenes, there are a lot of hard feelings, as
yes,
we all know.
Of course. But
they didn't let him into a meeting.
Yeah, well, they understood the bigger picture. And we had him on the set 3 days after the Super Bowl. I believe, added to the things that Jenkins accomplished and managed, I think he and his wife had a brand new baby in the midst of all
wow.
of this. And so I asked him, how did you manage this? And He didn't think it was anything special from the outside looking in. What it takes to do all of our jobs, and we're pretty good if we think of what we do, but these guys are objectively the best here in the NFL. And to manage the politics and to manage that schism halfway through the season when Goodell, you know, was sitting on a pile of dynamite that could have gone off under him.
Yeah.
And Malcolm managed that. That was remarkable. You know, I'm a Giants fan, but I was rooting for him.
Well,
and the
I think the Eagles were remarkable, and Chris Long, I think, deserves a lot of the
yes,
credit
he
there
does.
Because he was a white teammate who stood up.
And that, he was
to me,
consistent.
Is one of the great shortcomings in the NFL in particular.
Yeah, that there is haven't
that
been
white,
enough. Yeah.
The white men who go side by side and they talk about we're going
Brother
into battle
Red,
and
yeah.
we're all, you know, yeah. doing this fight together. It's like they're not there. They were not there. The white players on the 49ers were not there for Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
Eric Reed was there. They And if you really feel that this is your brother and you want to understand what they're going through and you're going to use all these, you know, analogies about war and battle and all that, Chris Long was a very rare cat who stood up for
what he was probably less than three or four guys to do it, right around the lake.
Right, and I find that to this day a sad thing.
Kind of akin to the look on Jerry Jones' face. I remember we were wondering how they would manage the kneel or not kneel on the Monday night.
The smirk, you mean?
Your word, and I'm not disagreeing with it at all. I was watching it live. I'm on the phone with my producer. We're going to do a show the next day. I said, I can't believe how they just stage managed that. Right into the camera. Like, I figured it out. As I figure everything out, is me and Bob Kraft were on the league, you know? Yeah. I say, half kidding.
Yeah.
You can correct me, Peter, if you'd like.
Peter's sitting back with his hands on his head.
No, so. I
just thought that was masterful on one hand, and I thought borderline.
You know what you know what I did think though, looking back on that, I thought Roger Goodell should have come out a lot stronger when Donald Trump first, you know,
in September
called
of 17,
sons of bitches and all that. I mean that should have been a no doubt come out strong and basically saying leave our players alone or start talking intelligently about our players instead of in an incendiary way.
I got to say it was so refreshing dealing with Adam Silver the last couple of months.
Who came into office with the crisis handed to him.
With the Donald Sterling crisis and just that minority.
How interesting was it, by the way, because I'm not a big NBA fan, but how interesting was it to see at the NBA draft Adam Silver get cheered? I said, oh, my God.
Never happened to a commissioner.
I mean, I'm not used to a commissioner getting supported by the fans.
How
what
weird
is that?
Was it when there was an issue involving an owner, the Warriors minority owner, who had that awful interaction.
Took care of
and they solved it right away.
I got to the media, to our interview session the next morning after we just found out that guy was a minority owner. And I said to one of the NBA people, how are you guys going to put out a statement? And they said, it should be in your inbox. And by the time we got out of our interview session about an hour later, they had already punished him and banned him for it.
And
you know,
the story was over and you move on.
The story was over. In the NFL, everyone would have lawyered up. It would have taken weeks.
How come
Goodell would have hemmed and hawed?
Did you think that Goodell, you know, had the moxie, you know, before you know all this happened, that he would stand up to Trump or do something like that?
I mean, I thought he would defend the league. I thought he would. And I thought he should have to this day.
And what's been the reaction like when he hears this kind of criticism? What kind of response?
I think basically he wants to make it go away. I think he wants to make it go away.
You know,
he thinks that he's not going to win fighting with the president. That's what he thinks. So
he needs a man up.
Yeah, and I thought he should have.
Well, he's sitting on a league with, you know, he's got three factions of owners, and he does allegedly and in fact work for them, and he's managing that. He's managing two segments of player,
right?
And a good 70% of the owners in that league either contributed to Donald Trump's reelection campaign
or the inaugural.
His inaugural campaign.
And then 75-80% of the league is black.
Yeah. I mean, he is in a tough spot, but there are times when he needs to basically say, this is wrong. Shut up.
Well, leadership is called for. I mean, and you know, that's what sports is supposed to be about, right? You know,
about having courage.
About having courage being a leader when the moment calls for it. And the leader of that league did not, I don't think, perform that way.
You mentioned the Warriors incident. I have a question. I don't know if you've seen this recent statement from Adam Silver about that. They're going to use the word governor instead of owner.
Yeah.
I'm curious, by raise of hands or vocal assent, is that something you guys will do in your writing or on your shows?
Probably.
Use the word governor rather than owner?
Yeah. I mean, Draymond Green is one who really talked a lot about that. And it never really occurred to me before that it could be such a charged, you know, relationship. Because, sure, technically is this an asset? They own the team. But really, the people we call the owners, very few of them are the actual you know, owners the way, you know, I own that iPhone. Well, actually, I don't even own that. That's my work. what do we really own? Let's continue.
Moment of truth, huh?
but I think that I think, especially in these leagues, as you say, that, you know, the majority are African American, and it's just like a weird dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of owners I mean, all of them that I can think of are white.
Yeah.
Governor has a much better, softer sound to it.
But listen, I'm sorry. I'm not calling Jerry Jones the governor of the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones owns Sox, Jocks, players, stadiums, whatever. He's the owner of the team. I'm calling him the owner of the team.
Like, you will call Jed York the CEO, principal and CEO.
That's a different story. If somebody is the majority owner of the team, I'm calling him the owner of the team.
But you know,
and I don't even know what percentage Jed York owns, if any.
Well, his parents own all of it.
Right, right. So I'm not calling Jed York the owner of the team. I'm happy to call him the CEO or whatever his title is.
I mean, I get the point with the players.
Yeah,
it's a word. It has power. I'm a 64-year-old white guy. I'm not a 23-year-old black millionaire trying to make my way through the NBA. And I get it. And I think those teams that will make that change, is the league going to do it league-wide? Or
the league says they've been doing it internally for years now, which I'm not totally sure on. But
what it represents to me is it's not just a gesture. It's a small action that shows you care and you listen. What does it hurt to change your business card or change a listing on the team website? I think it's a gesture of goodwill and empathy and nuance, and we don't have enough of that.
Right.
And what is it? What if it's going to make the interpersonal relationships more fruitful and put you in a better place? It's a small step. Do it. But I understand what you're saying, Peter. Yeah. Jerry Jones is the Cowboys.
He's the person who owns the franchise. I'm not saying I would never call Jerry Jerry Jones, Stan Kroenke. I mean, I've got to think of all the different ownership groups in the NFL. Obviously, the Giants have a different thing. They have two co-owners. But I just think we're getting a little bit...
PC, huh?
We're getting a little bit
I don't think
PC.
It's totally snowflake. I mean, I can sort of understand where they're coming from. I understand your point. Yeah. But there's a certain sensitivity that hits a nerve, and you talk about the third rail in the country.
I understand.
And for some people, it's like that's just the perpetuation of the whole thing. And it's like, damn, man, we got enough going on. Now you're pounding me with this, too.
But
you
at least we know in Slapshot, we can still have the Goldie who owns the Chiefs.
Yeah, that's right.
This is McRae. I know you guys have some awards to get, so I'm going to ask one final question. We can kind of go around the room. I'm curious, you know, given all we've talked about, do you think this is a good time for a young person to get into sports media? Do you think, what do you think about the future of this business that you guys have invested so much in?
Well, I think it's a good time. I when people say to me, "What's it going to look like in 10 years?" I'm like, "You're going to be the one to decide that, young person." I have no idea what it's going to look like, but I think that it's a great a continuing conversation, whatever we think of social media. I think it has fueled sports and helped it become even more all-encompassing and
important,
the other
right?
thing and important. And the other thing I will say about social media, that from a woman's point of view, mm-hmm. things do not get swept under the rug anymore. Mm-hmm. If someone batters their wife or does something, that doesn't go away. You know, and I've, for years, especially in the NFL, I would see this kind of thing get swept under the rug. It would just get dropped. It would disappear. Things don't disappear thanks to social media. And that irritates a lot of people. But I think it's a very good development. I think it's interesting. I think, you know, it's just changing. Like every couple of months, it's something different. You know, there's a new idea about how this is all going to work. And then we recreate the wheel again. But there's still... interesting people, interesting stories, interesting conflicts between power and just the stuff we're talking about right now. So, yeah, I think it's a good time. Why not? I don't know what the money is, but it's a good time.
It's a great entertainment, and I don't think it's going away. People love it. It's such an incredible vehicle. It also makes you think, too. And good point, hopefully. And, you know, certainly since before I was born, I mean, the diversity aspect has gotten a heck of a lot better. It's gotten a lot better since I joined in. I mean, I was an intern in 1973, and even now I'm one of two black Americans who are calling Major League Baseball on a full-time basis. I mean, I'd like to see that number change at some point. And I'd like to see more African-American kids get into Major League Baseball because not everybody can be LeBron or, you know, pick a football player. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about the exchange of ideas like this. And like you said, on the social media, it has its good, it has its bad, like everything in life.
We've seen so much change. Nobody knows what the next 5 years will be. But I think people coming into the field now, and I speak at a number of schools and classrooms, and There's so many good ideas, and you have it in your hands because of the digital revolution, your website, your RSS, whatever it is, you can get stuff out there and create a name for yourself. And the primacy that traditional companies have had, we see it everywhere in media. You know, the pie has many more pieces to it now. So there's room for you, but it's going to be the gig economy. There's no doubt about that. You won't be sitting here, you know, Peter and I, you know, 40 years doing our thing, you know, so many for the same company in some cases. That ain't going to be the case. You have to recalibrate it. But you can define it. You can define your career. And I come on in. We need good, young, smart people, and they're there.
Yeah.
I would say this, Bob. In 1975, when I went off to college at Ohio University, there was only one thing I wanted to do. I wanted to be a writer for a newspaper, and then I wanted to climb the ladder, and eventually, at some point in my life, I wanted to work, whether it be in sports or news or anything, for the Boston Globe or the Washington Post or some big newspaper. That's all I thought of. I never one time in my life thought of doing radio, thought of doing television, and obviously that's much more than a decade before the internet even existed. So the thought that today, so here we are now, we're four decades later, and you know, I recorded a podcast interview today with Doc Emrick here in Winston-Salem. I've got two stories planned for Football Night in America on NBC this year that I'm really excited about. Different weird type stories that are fun. I am doing a lot of writing still, but I'm doing, you know, a weekly podcast. And the other thing I think that we all have to realize, there is room for storytelling. I don't know what way it's going to be told. I don't know if there will become a spate of 30 for 30 type networks. I don't know if it's going to be some great podcast opportunities out there where instead of being on the treadmill and listening to music, four out of five people are listening to mysteries on a podcast or information programs. I don't know. All I know when I talk to student groups, the one thing I say is there is always a place for great storytelling and great reporting. Just find it. I don't know what it's going to be. You find it, you define it, and you do it.
Awesome. That's a great note to end on. So I just want to thank you guys all again, and Bob, Dave, and Peter. Congrats also.
Thank you.
On the awards, and maybe we'll do this again sometime soon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you guys.
Absolutely. Thanks for your time.
All right, well, that's it, folks, from Winston-Salem, the National Sports Media Association Hall of Fame Roundtable with Bob Lee and Killian, Peter King, and Dave Sims. Definitely go check out their work. I'm at JacobFeldman4 on Twitter if you want to let me know what you thought. Jimmy will be back in the seat next week. Until then, make sure to subscribe, share, and thanks for listening.